Basically, in greater depth, the principles we read in the previous chapter. Everyone understands that? The 64 principles. So, Om Gana Timadanda Sha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, we can only go till 7:30 because I have to do the Didi Puja before we leave. So, evidence regarding devotional principles. And as we remember, the first one was accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. So we'll start reading. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd chapter, verse 21, Prabhuda tells Maharaj Nimi, "My dear king, please know for certain that in the material world there is no happiness. It is simply a mistake to think that there is happiness here, because this place is full of nothing but miserable conditions. Any person who is seriously desirous of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments, and thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. Everyone should try to find such a bona fide spiritual master in order to fulfill his mission of life, which is to transfer himself to the plane of spiritual bliss." So there's different qualities that one should look for when looking for a spiritual master. Actually, it said, Ado Guru Pada Ashraya. In the beginning, one should take shelter of the spiritual master. So, the qualities are summarized in three. Samit Pani, Shrochyam, Brahmanishtam. And that's from the verse, Tadviginartam Sagurum Eva Abhigachet. Abhigachet is in the imperative in Sanskrit. Imperative means you got to do it. There's no alternative. If you want Sadviginartam, if you want realization. So Samit Pani, Shrochyam, Brahmanishtam. Samit Pani can mean, in Sanskrit, it can mean either fetching water or fetching firewood for the spiritual master. That means the spiritual master must be a servant of his spiritual master. That's the point being made here. Samit Pani Shrochyam Brahmanishtam. He must be a humble servant of his spiritual master. Just like even when Krishna went to the Gurukula, he had to humbly fetch firewood, isn't it? And he got trapped in a rainstorm with his friend. Who was his friend?
Sudama.
And Sudama ate all the food. And then Sudama had to suffer because of that. But ultimately, he got a mansion with a swimming pool and everything like that. Because he got the mercy of Krishna later on. So in any case, one has to examine whether a candidate is actually functioning as a very humble servant. What does that mean in terms of Srila Prabhupada and our relationship with Prabhupada? Is that one should be serving Prabhupada's mission. Because that's what it means. And if one is not serving Prabhupada's mission, then it's an indication they're not connected with Prabhupada. As simple as that. I mean, to me, there's a mathematical formula, you know, things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. If not this, then not that, you know, I can do all these different syllogisms. I don't know if you know what a syllogism is. That's a logical thing, you know, like if, you know, like if you say all men are mortal, which is debatable. Anyway, if you say all men are mortal, or women too, mortal means, you know, you die at some point. And then you say Krishna Chandra is a man, or let's say he is his body. Therefore, Krishna Chandra is mortal. Got it? So anyway, and then you can also say, going backwards, you can say, if someone is immortal, he's not a man. It's something else, you know. So anyway, so getting back to the point, that is the preliminary, or practically the most important thing, because if one serves the order of the spiritual master, other things come. Like that story that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told, or it's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where one illiterate person got an order from his spiritual master that was impossible to fulfill, that is to read the Bhagavad Gita every day. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came across that person trying to fulfill the order of his guru, he saw that that person was crying intensely, you know, tears were pouring from his eyes. And Lord Chaitanya said, you know, why are you crying? Because everyone else was thinking he was crying because he couldn't read. But he said, because I am thinking of how wonderful it is that Krishna has become the chariot driver of his devotee Arjuna, the god has become the servant of his devotee Arjuna. And Lord Chaitanya said, you're the real knower of the Bhagavad Gita. So in other words, realization comes from that, from being the humble servant of your spiritual master, following the order of your spiritual master. And then that's the first quality. And the second quality, samitpani shrotriyam, one must have heard from the guru. Not that one just like has the guru as a fashion. You know, that I have my guru, you have your guru, and you keep a picture or something like that. But the picture, or the guru also has a mouth to him, not just feet. You know, we're holistic here, you know. I love your feet, Guru Maharaj, but, you know, keep your mouth shut. Or Guru Maharaj, I'm doing this. Do I have your blessings? You know, anyway. So, of course, for one who is not surrendered, the guru will say, okay, go ahead, do it. But in any case, Shrotriyam, one must have heard from the spiritual master. And then the final quality when judging a bona fide spiritual master is called Brahma Nishtam. And that comes from one of the stages of devotional service, Nishta, which means steady, 24/7, which means not that a guru checks into his guru business during the day and then he checks out at night and he goes to the mosh pit or something like that. And he goes to the, you know, you see Guru Maharaj and then at the disco at night, you know, just. But during the day, you know, he's pretty good. Anyway, so you have to be able to see someone's life completely, 24 hours a day. Of course, not that you should put a webcam on him. But, you know, you should be able to perceive, you know, what's happening or ask people who know what he's doing. Anyway, that's the quality. And also in Krishna consciousness movement, one who has a position of responsibility, like guru, temple president, whatever, has to have visible sadhana. Visible means what? You can see it. Not invisible sadhana. I chant my rounds. Maybe you don't see me chant my rounds, but you know, I chant my rounds. Don't you have faith? I chant my rounds when you weren't looking. I mean, just like even here, the devotees can hear me chanting my rounds early in the morning. I don't know. Do you hear that sometimes? I go, Om Namo Shivaya, Om Namo Shivaya. Yeah, I mean, this morning I was up before 4 chanting. And then taking care of bodily necessities, too. So the purport is that one should not accept a spiritual master as a spiritual master, someone who is fool number one, who has no direction according to scriptural injunctions, whose character is doubtful, and who does not follow the principles of devotional service, who has not conquered the influence of his 6 sense-gratifying agents, you know. Vacho vegam, manasakruta vegam, yuva vegam, uriva pashta vegam, so you have to see. You can test the guru by trying to make him angry. Insulting him, you know, see if he succumbs to it. He says, you nonsense guru, you bogus. Shanti, he says, shanti, shanti, then you know he's bona fide. No, you do it by observation, not by, you don't test. The disciple, prospective disciple has to test the guru, but by observation, not that he comes up with a Bhakti Shastri test for the guru. Guru Maharaj, please fill in this questionnaire. Just like we have this ISKCON disciple course, so we should have, you know, every disciple should give his guru the ISKCON guru test. You know? The six agents of sense gratification are the tongue, genitals, belly, anger, mind, and words. This is from the Upadeshamrita, of course. Anyone who has practiced controlling these six is permitted to make disciples all over the world. In other words, to tolerate the pushings of these things. Because as long as one has a material body, the senses will push you. And you just have to, what do we say, function on the intelligence platform. I mean, just like everybody knows that I eat a certain diet. So, obviously, you know, if someone brings out a nice big pizza, the senses will say, go for it. But then the intelligence says, do you want to die? And then the mind says, maybe, but at least we'll die happy. And then the intelligence is back and forth conversation. Intelligence says, you fool. Don't you understand you're a servant of your spiritual master? Your body doesn't belong to you. Shut up. And then the mind replies back, I'm sorry. I apologize. I will never do it again, but then the mind does it again. So, so that, you know, there's a conversation between the mind and intelligence. Where the mind, the intelligence has to keep preaching to the mind. Your duty is to serve your spiritual master. Your duty is to become Krishna conscious. And therefore, don't do this or do this, you know, depending on the circumstance. And then the mind then has to accept. Sometimes it's described, there was one devotee who described it, training the mind, I'm not going to give the hitting of the stick example right now, but training the mind, it's like in American baseball, there's a catcher. And in order to keep the mitt, it's called the mitt. You know what a mitt is? It's a mitt. In order to keep the mitt in shape, he has to keep punching it like that so it'll be in the proper shape for the ball. So one has to keep punching the mind like that to make sure it's in the proper shape. That's a nice example, from an American example. Do you have mitts in any sort of games here? No. No. Too bad. Cricket? How do they catch the ball in cricket?
They have a glove.
The glove, that's what I'm talking about. So, do they keep the... what does the glove look like?
This shape.
Oh, just shape. Yeah, do they have to punch it ever to keep it in? No. No, both hands.
Because it's the normal bat.
Not normal bat.
It's padded, right? Okay. But anyway, in America, it's a big glove like this. And they have to keep going like this. So we have to keep going like that with the mind. To accept such a spiritual master is the crucial point for advancement in spiritual life. One who is fortunate enough to come under the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master is sure to traverse the path of spiritual salvation without any doubt. Wow. So the next one is accepting initiation from the spiritual master and receiving instruction from him. Sage Prabuddha continue to speak to the king as follows. My dear king, a disciple has to accept the spiritual master not only as spiritual master, but also as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Super Soul. In other words, the disciple should accept the spiritual master as God, in other words, servitor, because he is the external manifestation of Krishna. This is confirmed in every scripture, and a disciple should accept the spiritual master as such. One should learn Srimad Bhagavatam seriously with all respect and veneration from the spiritual master. Hearing and speaking Srimad Bhagavatam is the religious process which elevates one to the platform of serving and loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the principles of religion are contained. Like when Krishna left this planet, Krishna Swadama Bhagate, as described in the Bhagavatam, then he took with him, you know, all the principles of religion. And then the question by the sages is, by whom or by what are the principles of religion protected or kept in the age of Kali? And that's the Srimad Bhagavatam. The attitude of a disciple should be to satisfy the bona fide spiritual master. This will be very easy for him to understand. Then it will be very easy for him to understand spiritual knowledge. This is confirmed in the Vedas, and Rupa Goswami will further explain that for a person who has unflinching faith in God and the spiritual master, everything becomes revealed very easily. Next one. So it's serving the spiritual master with faith and confidence. Regarding accepting initiation from the spiritual master in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 17th chapter, verse 27, it is stated by Lord Krishna, "My dear Uddhava, the spiritual master must be accepted not only as my representative, but as my very self. He must never be considered on the same level with an ordinary human being." Acharyamam Gyanamyam Abhamanyat Karichit Namarchavudya Suyita Savra Deva Mayogu. That's the verse. One should never be envious of the spiritual master as one may be envious of an ordinary man. The spiritual master should always be seen as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by serving the spiritual master, one is able to serve all the demigods. Wow. So the next one is following in the footsteps of saintly persons. In the Skanda Purana, it is advised that a devotee follow the past acharyas and saintly persons, because by such following, one can achieve the desired results with no chance of lamenting or being baffled in the progress. The scripture known as the Brahma Yamala states as follows. If someone wants to pose himself as a great devotee without following the authorities of the revealed scriptures, then his activities will never help him to make progress in devotional service. Instead, he will simply create disturbances for the sincere students of devotional service. Those who do not strictly follow the principles of revealed scriptures are generally called sahajas. Those who have imagined everything to be cheap, who have their own concocted ideas, and who do not follow the scriptural injunctions, such persons are simply creating disturbances in the discharge of devotional service. So, of course, this refers, when we talk about scriptural injunctions, it's in reference to preaching the right philosophy and also acting in terms of the sadhana bhakti process. Because even if one is on a higher platform of devotional service, let's say bhava or prema, one still acts as if they were a neophyte in terms of setting an example for others. And of course, we see in the case of Srila Rupa Goswami and all the other Goswamis of Vrindavan, they actually were very strict in their performance of sadhana, in spite of being on the highest platform. In fact, you know, they chanted their rounds every day, they woke up early every day. Of course, Haridas Thakur did the same. And so they didn't simply say, you know, we're on a higher platform, or we can't get up early in the morning, or, you know, my body doesn't cooperate with me. We have so many excuses. They were very strict. It's described that their performance of sadhana bhakti, in spite of not being on that platform, sadhana bhakti, was like lines on a stone. You know, you can't erase lines on a stone. So they were so strict in that regard. And that was to set an example for others, and also due to their humility. If one thinks that they're so advanced, they don't have to wake up early in the morning and attend the programs and everything like that, that's either a sign of false pride or something else, you know, sahajism or ignorance, isn't it? So everyone should be waking up early. I mean, especially if you're living at the temple, right? You're living in the units. You should just, like, ring an alarm every morning. Go around. Spray water on people. It should be like I did when I was a temple commander. What do you think? Of course, don't blame me for it. If you are caught or killed, I will disavow any knowledge of your actions. That's from a movie, anyway. You know that movie? No. Anyway, you don't need to know that movie. If you're caught or killed, I will just say, I don't know. I never told them to do that. In this connection, an objection may be raised by those who are not in devotional service and who do not care for the revealed scriptures. An example of this is seen in Buddhist philosophy. Lord Buddha appeared in the family of a high-grade Kshatriya king, but his philosophy was not in accordance with the Vedic conclusions, and therefore he was rejected. Under the patronage of a Hindu king, Maharaj Ashoka, the Buddhist religion was spread all over India and the adjoining countries. However, after the appearance of the great stalwart teacher, Shankaracharya, this Buddhism was driven out beyond the borders of India. The Buddhists or other religionists do not care for the revealed scriptures. Sometimes they say that there are many devotees of Lord Buddha who show devotional service to Lord Buddha and who therefore should be considered devotees. In answer to this argument, Rupa Goswami says that the followers of Buddha cannot be accepted as devotees. Although Lord Buddha is accepted as an incarnation of Krishna, the followers of such incarnations are not very advanced in their knowledge of the Vedas. To study the Vedas means to come to the conclusion of the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, any religious principle which denies the supremacy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not accepted and is called atheism. In other words, Buddhists are atheists. Atheism means defying the authority of the Vedas and decrying the great acharyas who teach Vedic scriptures for the benefit of the people in general. Lord Buddha is accepted as an incarnation of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but in the same Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that Lord Buddha appeared in order to bewilder the atheistic class of men. Therefore, his philosophy is meant for bewildering the atheist and should not be accepted. If someone asks, why should Krishna propagate atheistic principles? The answer is that it was the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to end the violence which was then being committed in the name of the Vedas. The so-called religionists were falsely using the Vedas to justify their violent acts such as meat-eating, and Lord Buddha came to lead the fallen people away from such a false interpretation of the Vedas. Also for the atheists, Lord Buddha preached atheism so that they would follow him and thus be tricked into devotional service to Lord Buddha or Krishna. So it's interesting about the Emperor Ashok. He was also quite a violent person until he became a Buddhist. He actually went to South India around Jagannath Puri, and he was attacking people, killing so many, you know, men, women, children, everything like that. And then he came to the realization, somehow or other, this is horrible. And then he came back and became a Buddhist. And because he became a Buddhist, all of India at that particular time was Buddhist. But this was actually a plan of Krishna. First of all, to take people away from the improper understanding of the Vedas, which would, they were thinking was justifying animal killing. And then later on, Krishna arranged for Lord Shiva to appear as Shankaracharya to bring people back to the Vedas, but with covered Buddhism. And then later on, Lord Chaitanya appeared to complete the circle. So, anyway, so Buddha had a purpose. So, inquiring about eternal religious principles in the Narada Purana, it is said if one is actually very serious about devotional service, then all of his purposes will be served without any delay. So we should inquire from devotees about eternal religious principles. Sat dharma samstapa go, as described by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Next one is being prepared to give up everything material for Krishna's satisfaction. In the Padma Purana, it is stated, for one who has given up his material sense enjoyment and has accepted the principles of devotional service, the opulence of a Vishnu Loka, the kingdom of God, is awaiting. So that doesn't mean we give up everything material, but we're prepared to give up everything material if it's favorable for Krishna consciousness. And if it's not favorable, we don't give it up. So that's the first two principles enunciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said the first principle is to accept everything favorable. The second principle is to reject everything unfavorable in devotional service. And there are six principles. What are the six principles? What's that? Well, that's the devotees. That's understanding who is a guru. But as far as the six principles of surrender, what are the six principles of surrender?
Trivial one's mind.
No. See, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's it. You're talking about the six loving exchanges. Six principles: that accepting everything favorable, rejecting everything unfavorable, understanding the Lord is always protecting one. What's the next one? Very important. Understanding the Lord is always maintaining one. Nobody knows the other one? The other two? Close. Wow, these are very important principles. You should all remember them for next time. I'll test you. Always being meek and humble. And the last one is?
Surrendering everything.
Completely dependent on Krishna.
Well, that was the middle two. Having no separate interests other than the interest of the Lord, which is like surrender. So I'll reiterate them again. I think we have to end in a second. So one is to accept everything favorable for devotional service. That's yukta vairagya. Rejecting everything unfavorable for devotional service. Three is to understand the Lord is always maintaining one. Four is to understand the Lord is always protecting one. Five is to always, this is the most difficult one, always be meek and humble. What does that mean? Meek and humble means that sometimes you have to yell because you're meek and humble. If Krishna wants you. That means being submissive to Krishna's order. Just like when I first joined the movement, I was materially meek and humble. Not humble, but I was materially meek. I was shy. I was very shy. And that was good, because that way it protected me from the girls. I was too shy to ask any of them out on a date, which was good. I mean, that saved me from so much degradation. You know, while all my friends were just out partying, I was just like, hmm. That's good. Anyway, and then, of course, but when I joined the movement, I was told, you can't be shy anymore. I said, what me? I want to be shy. They said, you go on Sankirtan. I said, how can I do that? Talk to people in the street. Just approach people. You know, it was very hard for me in the beginning to say, sir, can I speak to you for a second? You know, it's very hard. So the first people I picked on, not picked on, but the first people I stopped on Sankirtan, I just chose like some low-hanging fruit, which are the little old black ladies on the street. Because they're easy, you know. You say, oh, praise the Lord. I say, oh, son. And that was easy, you know. So I was distributing back the Godheads to them before I got to anybody else, you know. And then, but gradually, you know, I had to give up my. So in other words, I rejected that which was unfavorable for my devotional service, even though I liked it. So even like a particular mentality like that, like shyness, I just had to give up. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here today. I'd be going, whoo. You know, so. But anyway, thank God I was shy before. So anyway, so that's what it means. So anyway, that's the sixth one. Yeah, accepting the Lord is always protecting one, always maintaining one, being meek and humble. Yeah. That's five, yeah. And the sixth one is what? Do you remember what I said?
Having no separate interests.
Having no separate interests other than the interests of the Lord. Anyabhi lashita shunyam. Okay, so we have time for one question before we do the Didi Puja. Anyone have any questions about this? Tomorrow, I don't think we'll have a class because we got to get ready to go. We got to do our puja tomorrow. And I don't even think we have time for Mangal Arati tomorrow because we have to get to the airport. And then you'll all be free of me, able to get back when the cats away, the mice will play. Sleeping, then you can wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning and enjoy life. Okay, any questions?
But these are still quite prominent in India and Southeast Asia.
Not in India so much, but in Southeast Asia, because Shankaracharya drove Buddhism away. I mean, certain parts of Bihar, Buddhism is actually still there, because that's where Buddha was from, Bihar. Did you know that? Gaya. There's Bodh Gaya. So, but in other parts of India, I mean, once in a while see a Buddhist, but hardly ever. Sri Lanka, Nepal, Cambodia, all the Thailand, all the countries around. You know, China, you have a different branch of Buddhism, actually. There's Chinese Buddhism, there's Japanese Buddhism. So it just drove them out. But India, where Buddhism started, is hardly there. because of Shankaracharya. He was very strong against the Buddhists.
So we take Buddha as an incarnation, but we don't worship him.
Well, no, we worship him. We worship him as an incarnation carrying out a specific mission. However, I mean, if you go to Thailand, you'll see they have a golden Buddha that's like taller than this building. And there's a reclining one that's like a whole soccer field long, basically. I mean, they still worship Buddha. In Thailand, they sell incense in every corner. You know, you can worship Lord Brahma, too. They have four heads. Anyone seen that in Thailand? They have like deities with four heads, Lord Brahma, in Thailand. So anyway, there's remnants of Vedic culture or, you know, Indian culture in different countries around India. You know, like you have Indonesia, Garuda Airlines, and things like that. And all these countries have a Ramayana story, too.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. Bali, they have a Ramayana story, and they do dances for the Ramayana. It's really interesting. But Buddhism, it's broken up into many different branches now. And most of the Buddhists I know eat meat. Whereas Buddha was teaching ahimsa, paramodharma, you know, non-violence is the supreme dharma. And when I asked the Buddhists, why do you eat meat? They said, well, something's given to us, we have to accept it. You know, something's put in the begging bowl, then they accept it. And so, you know, the Dalai Lama one time said that in the airplane to a devotee. He said, why are you eating meat? He said, well, it's given to me, you know. I have to accept it. And then the devotee said, well, you ordered it. So, I mean, actually it states that one, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that if Nivritta Tarshari Bhagaya Gimanas Pavoshara Shodra Mano Biramat Ka utama shloka gunanavadat puman virajayata vinal poshugnat, that if one is eating animals or is killing animals, they can't appreciate Krishna Katha. So that's like a prerequisite for spiritual life. In any religion, one must be nonviolent. And if you're not nonviolent, if you're harming other living entities unnecessarily, then you're not religious. I mean, you can't understand Krishna Katha. So I think we have to end now, right? So we can do our puja and be out of here by 8. Oh, my God. And no bicycle ride today. When? Puja's not going to be over until 8. And you said I have to leave by 8.
How long in the prison?
Well, we have to be there 9:30.
We have to be there 45 minutes early.
Yeah.
So...